Finally today, you remember Sinatra's great ode to New York City?
And if I can make it there, I'm gonna make it anywhere. It's up to...
Well, now, from the heart of the city, one leading preacher is telling his flock, forget the obsession with making it. The Reverend Tim Keller is a bit of an oddity in Manhattan. He's a megachurch leader. His Redeemer Presbyterian Church on the Upper West Side draws about 7,000 worshippers a week. And he tells the Wall Street brokers and the young professionals to abandon some of their ambition. As New York Magazine put it, he wants to save their yuppie souls. Tim Keller's heading to Australia next week for the City to City conference. I caught up with him earlier on the line from New York, and he explained why he was, in his own words, sick to the pit of his stomach when he first moved to start a congregation in New York.
Nobody likes to fail in anything, and of course I was sick in the pit of my stomach because I knew that coming to a pretty secular city, compared to the rest of, the country, where churches tend to die instead of start, the prospects of success weren't great.
So there was a cultural barrier that you felt you had to overcome?
Oh, yes, and it's actually probably worse now than it used to be. There's a fair amount of hostility to traditional Christianity in the city.
I think you were also quoted in the New York Times as saying you wanted to teach other evangelical pastors to love New York and not fear its sort of worldly influences.
I did say that, and I also think that's a right thing to try to do, because there's a tendency to see New York as only a place that is anti-Christian, when actually it's a place where a lot of people come in order to be creative. A lot of people come here with dreams to do innovative things. It's a kind of culture-forming womb, and like all human culture, there's good and bad here. But in many ways, New York does things that the other big cities of the country can't do because it's so diverse, because it's so large, because it's so global. And so I do want evangelicals to appreciate New York instead of just see it as a spiritually dark place, yes.
You've said that people go to New York with dreams. I also noticed that it's been observed that you want to challenge what's called the civic religion of success. I mean, has the notion of success, material success, professional success, become a quasi-religion? And indeed, are you challenging it?
Well, it is. I mean, the first part of your question, yes. It is definitely something that is a quasi-religion. And when I call it that, even the people who are not particularly prone to believe in Christianity, they recognize it as such. They do see it as a new kind of religion. It's what they live for. It's where they get their meaning in life. It's, in a sense, how they're saving themselves. So they agree to that. Now, whether or not I'm challenging it, I hope I'm trying to. Whether I'm successfully challenging it or not, we'll see.
What's the composition of your parish and your congregation? It's very large, but just give me an idea of the sort of people who flock there each Sunday.
It is young. Probably average age is, say, 31 or something like that. Probably 60 to 65% of all the people that come are single. But that's also who live here. It's dominated by single people. It's probably about 45% Asian, 45% Anglo, and about 10% Black, Hispanic, other. Also, there's a pretty good amount of professional people, of course.
Is it the demographic that we think of, though? A demographic that you might share, for example, with that very prominent parish in London, Holy Trinity Brompton, full of overly ambitious, rapidly rising young professionals?
Yes, it is. But it's not necessarily a wealthy congregation. When we have done some fundraising here, one of the most remarkable things is we do not have very large gifts from very wealthy people. We don't have wealthy people, but we have, you're absolutely right, they are ambitious and they're trying to move up the ladder, and they are professional people, so I would say they are very ambitious.
Are they too ambitious? Do they strive too much at times?
Yes, of course, and I think they would admit it. I don't get a lot of pushback when I talk about success, achievement, and wealth as being idolatry, God substitutes. I don't get pushback on that, even for people who don't believe in God. They're quite willing to admit that.
That surprises me, because in a way, aren't you challenging the whole self-identity of New York? I mean, as that famous philosopher Frank Sinatra said, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. I mean, it's quite a challenging thing you're saying about success not being as important as people think.
Yes, it is. I have been a little surprised at how maybe the very youngest people who are just getting started here might be cynical about that, saying, oh, yeah, it's easy for you to say. You know, I actually think people that are in mid-career or are starting to move up begin to realize that it's not nearly as satisfying as they thought. So I would say that there's plenty of folks who have come to see that it's not delivering the kind of powerful inner fulfillment that they thought it was going to deliver. I think that's the only possible reason why I'm not getting a lot of pushback.
How much of this ambition that you sense in young American professionals is actually forced on them by the whole corporate culture?
Well, I don't think it's forced on them by the corporate culture. It's an individualistic culture. In traditional cultures, you get your identity by fitting into your social role. So by being a good father, mother, son, daughter, you're placed in the clan or the tribe, and so that's how you know that you're a good person. But in an individualistic culture, you have to go out and earn your own self-worth. You've got to achieve it. You've got to be good at it. You've got to go out and change the world or make money or something like that. You really don't fit into an existing social role. And so what's going to happen is that under those circumstances where you have the breakdown of community and you have an individualistic, consumeristic culture, people have to create their own identity. And so they're doing success as a way of doing that thing.
The only reason I press you on it, Dr. Keller, is that it probably has a lot of resonance in Australia. I noticed that you were quoted as saying companies essentially force people to make work more important than anything else.
Yes, but it's not just companies here. There is a terrible, dark power almost in New York that makes everybody overwork. We all talk about it, no matter what we're doing, whether we're in the nonprofit sector, whether we're in the church ministry, everybody overworks here. It is the culture. It's not good. We have to talk about it, almost like alcoholics. We have to name it and talk about it, and very often talk about it for quite a while before we can get over it or even begin to make progress against it. I guess I'm trying to say it's bigger than just economics, but I do think that the financial world has a sick attitude toward work, where people working 100 hours a week is considered normal, yes.
I do notice that almost all of your church elders, in fact, maybe all of them, are men. Is that a deliberate development, and how does that sit with what is undoubtedly a very large female congregation that you have?
Well, I belong to a Presbyterian denomination in which only men can be elders and pastors. As you know, there are many churches in the world in which only men can be pastors, bishops, and elders. So when you say it's deliberate, yes, it's deliberate because it's the requirement of my denomination.
But how does it sit, as I said, with what is obviously a very large female component of your congregation?
The women in our congregation are not left out of ministry. They are involved in almost every other way except being elders. I'm sure there are some women I know over the years who it did not sit well with, and they left for conscience reasons. But on the other hand, we obviously have thousands of women here who either feel like, though they don't agree with that position, still love Redeemer and are very happy with all the other ways in which they can work here, and there are other women who support the position. So yes, I've had fallout, absolutely, but it hasn't crippled us in any way.
Well, the Reverend Dr. Tim Keller, you'll be in Australia soon. I thank you very much indeed for your time here on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you very much.
And you'll find a link to the City to City conference on our homepage at the RN website, which is where you can also download or stream all of today's stories. And we're on Twitter at ABC Religion. Thanks to our producer, Tiger Webb, and technical producer, Paul Gough. I'm Andrew West. Up next, it's Breakfast.